active shooter. It's not a drill.
As we speak, there is a horrific scene playing out at a high school in South Florida.
At the moment, we have a white male, we're told, wearing a burgundy shirt.
She kept texting me. All she kept saying was, please call 911, so I did. Told her, I love you, please stay safe.
I thought I was going to die.
17, you know, casualties, 17 people that aren't going to return to their families. And to me, that's totally unacceptable.
I'm still just shaking a bit because, I mean, that's my baby sister, you know.
We cannot be complacent. For anybody who's been paying attention over the last couple of years, I think if we've learned nothing else, we've learned that this can happen anywhere.
1 year ago today, 17 lives taken, dreams shattered, families devastated.
And I'm pissed, because my daughter I'm not going to see again. She's not here. She's in King David Cemetery. That's where I go to see my kid now. We can't forget about it. All these school shootings, it doesn't make sense.
Soon after, a new movement was born.
Not one more!
We're excited. It's cold outside, but it's okay because it is for a good cause.
We just want change.
Enough is enough!
Enough is enough!
Enough is enough!
This cannot be the America that we all accept.
Senator Rubio, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA?
All these people should be at home grieving, but instead we are up here standing together because if all our government and president can do is send thoughts and prayers, then it's time for victims to be the change that we need to see.
But in the year that followed, roughly 1,200 children lost their lives in the United States due to gun violence. That's the equivalent of a Parkland shooting every 5 days.
There are children all over the country dying silently because no one picks up their stories. No one collectively chronicles what happened since Parkland.
And so a project was born to remedy those holes in media coverage and public dialogue. And it was driven by teen journalists.
Every day he told his mom, "Mommy, you're so pretty. I love you. You're the best mom in the world."
A small superhero, loving and affectionate.
His mother proudly called him his sister's protector.
Known for being affectionate, he freely offered hugs and kisses.
4-year-old Kymarley Michael Harrington accidentally shot himself after finding a .40 caliber handgun in his Oakdale, Louisiana home.
Demetrius Micho Jefferson, 4, accidentally shot himself in the head at his family's apartment in Richmond, Virginia, while his mother slept in the other room.
Voices for the voiceless. I'm Arun Roth, and this is The Takeaway. Mary Claire Molloy is a student journalist. She's 18 years old and attends Brebeuf Jesuit High School in Indianapolis, Indiana. And Scarlett Liriano-Sapine is a 19-year-old student journalist at Baruch College here in New York City. They were reading there from profiles they wrote for the Since Parkland Project, which launched this week, supported by the Miami Herald, The Trace, and McClatchy newspapers. More than 200 student journalists from across the country wrote profiles for the project of each and every one of those 1,200 children. Mary Claire, Scarlett, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your work.
Thanks so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
Thank you. It's a great opportunity.
So we'll start off with Mary Claire. Could you tell us why you took on this project?
For me, Since Parkland was an opportunity to research and better understand the issue of gun violence, everyday gun violence specifically. But I also believe that telling these kids' stories is one of the most powerful things I will ever do because they aren't here anymore to share what happened in their lives, not just how they died, but who they were. And so being the writer that does that for them is so powerful.
Now, was there some kind of aha moment when you realized that mass shootings like Parkland weren't really the whole story?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of what we write is just everyday violence. And it's kind of like really shocking when you realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get past, you know?
Yeah, so I actually wrote a profile for a 1-year-old girl from Indianapolis. She only lived a few miles away from me. Her name is Malaysia Robson, and I had no idea that in March of 2018, two men shot over 44 bullets into her home, and one struck her in the chest and killed her. And I had no idea this had happened in my own city. And that opened my eyes to everyday gun violence and the idea that there are children all over the country dying kind of almost like silently because no one picks up their stories. No one collectively chronicles what happened until since Parkland.
Yeah. It's kind of like we've become so desensitized to this everyday gun violence. So when it happens, it doesn't really get as much coverage as it should.
Scarlett, was there a particular story that, I mean, I know there's it's maybe hard to pick one, but that stuck out to you, like maybe especially from when you first started?
I mean, definitely when the kids were on the younger side, like we write from the ages of like 0 to like 18. So I got a bunch of kids that were just like 4 and 3 years old. It was incredibly heartbreaking. Yeah.
And for both of you, you talked about this a little bit, but could you talk a bit more about what you felt your responsibility was to these individuals and their stories?
I mean, we are here to tell the stories of our fallen peers because they can't tell those stories anymore. I would say what makes Since Parkland so powerful is that we are of the age of some of these kids. Hmm. We are part of their generation, and so we are chronicling the fallen kids from our own generation, and that is so powerful. There's a level of relatability there that if you had adult writers doing these profiles, I don't think you would get that. I don't think it would be as powerful.
Both of you, tell me about some of the reaction you've heard from people so far to the profiles.
We've gotten all sorts of reactions. A lot of people are super impacted by it. We've gotten parents who have lost children to gun violence. We've gotten just all sorts of people just thanking us for our work and acknowledging it.
I had a Sandy Hook mom. She lost her daughter in Sandy Hook. She tweeted me that she was so sorry anyone ever had to write these profiles, but that they were amazing, something on the lines of that. There's been several moments through writing Since Parkland where the permanence of death has really struck me. And that was one of them because her 6 or 7 year old daughter never got to grow up, and she has to live with that for the rest of her life. And likewise, there was a moment when I was writing profiles about halfway through the project when I realized these kids are dead. They're not coming back. And they seem so vibrant and alive when you're writing about them because you're searching for the things that make them unique and wonderful. And then you still have to wrestle with the fact that they're gone.
You know, I know as a journalist, which is what you both are, when you spend a lot of time with stories like this, you know, that deal with violence or tragedy, it can get to you. Did it ever feel like too much or get to you emotionally?
Yeah, I would say we have a group chat of all the kids writing profiles. So we try to kind of create a little bit of a sense of community, especially for some of the more like violent. Well, they're all violent, but some of the harder ones to write about when there was, for example, I was one of 3 journalists who wrote about 3 kids who were killed by their father. One was a 9-month-old who I wrote about. One was a 2-year-old, one was a 4-year-old, and a 5-year-old was involved too, but they didn't die. So the father put them all in his SUV and shot them all and then turned the gun on himself. But to write that piece was really haunting, and we connected together, shared research, talked with each other about the process and how we were feeling, and I think that really helped us keep going.
I have to think that you must both be thinking differently, or when you hear the news, the idea of gun violence must affect you differently than it did in the past.
Yeah, I would say that it's a lot more personal. We're never going to see victims of gun violence as statistics again. It's so much more personal when you know the stories, when you've seen the faces of the children in front of the trigger. It changes your whole connection to the issue.
Have your views about gun violence changed from a policy perspective or a political perspective?
The biggest policy stance anyone in this country should take is that 1,200 kids shouldn't die from gun violence. We're not going to tell anyone how that should be solved, but it's just a call to action that it should be solved and that it's all hands on deck. Bring your perspectives to the table and do something. That's really, we want to bring individual readers to their own conclusion that this gun violence must stop, and we want to encourage them in any way they think is possible or good to stop the death.
Yeah, it's about raising awareness and making people conscious of the fact that this is happening.
You know, it's kind of, there's kind of an implicit criticism in this project of the media, of the mainstream news media, that we are not doing a good job of telling these stories. So I'm going to ask you both to sort of play media critic, you know, some months, you know, a year in now. Is the media doing a better job with a story, or are we still missing stuff?
I would say that while researching this project, I discovered which victims would get coverage and what that coverage would be like. Oftentimes, victims who are white had so much more coverage than victims of color. And victims of color, in terms of what I discovered with my writing, were more likely to be left unnamed in an original report, and you would have to go find their name. I also think that the media, both locally and nationally, report a lot about the death of the child and the perpetrator instead of who the child was. I can think back to all the mass shootings I've, you know, watched or learned about while I was going to school. Sandy Hook, for example. And I never remembered the victims' names. I always knew the perpetrators' names. It was only till Parkland that I knew all of the victims' names. And that needs to change, and that we are talking about the lives lost and not just how they were lost, but who the person was before.
In research, oftentimes we would have to work past news articles that have already been made. And a lot of the times there wasn't much to work with. We would have to like research really in depth to even find names or places where it happened. It was kind of heartbreaking.
And you talked about the response a bit, but this must have meant so much to the families.
I think so. I've seen a few tweets from family members of victims. I think they're still grieving. They're always going to be grieving, but this is just a powerful moment for them to see their lost loved one chronicled in a really, really powerful way.
Mary Claire Malloy is a student journalist at Brebeuf Jesuit High School in Indianapolis, Indiana. And Scarlett Liriano-Sapin is a student journalist at Baruch College in New York City. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And you can find the profiles of all 1,200 children, including those written by Mary Claire and Scarlett, at sinceparkland.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.